Wayne and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I am Andrew.
Well, guys.
Did I throw you off, Wayne? You hesitated there.
No, on my end, you had a huge hesitation.
Yeah, you had a great big long pause there. Very dramatic pause there. Much like Simon Williams. Yeah.
Listen to that.
I'm curious to hear what you guys thought of Wonder Man, because I find at this point, I just don't know if I care about Marvel TV shows anymore.
Well, I'm a fan of Wonder Man, going back as obviously as a fan of West Coast Avengers. Sure, he's a little whiny in certain eras of his, but I tend to like Simon Williams. I mostly like Marvel TV still, but three episodes in, the best part of the Wonder Man TV series for me is Trevor. Trevor is like the only reason for me to keep watching at this point, because I find Trevor funny and amusing. But overall, the show I find is so slowly paced. I do enjoy like the Hollywood industry type bits of it. I enjoyed seeing the Joey Pants for a moment, but I gotta tell you, it's hard to get through it. It's so slowly paced.
So I've watched the first two episodes of it, and I'm getting really strong The Sentry vibes from it. Simon Williams talks about, you know, and the Wonder Man movie character that we see at the first in the first part of the first episode. We see that character talk about the void, and then we hear Simon Williams, you know, recite those lines in for his audition prep. He talks about the void. And maybe it's because I just finished reading the first volume of Brian Michael Bendis's New Avengers, where we get to meet, Bob Reynolds as the Sentry, and we talk about the void. But I got to tell you, I feel like there's a lot about Simon Williams. You know, he's crazy powerful, doesn't have a lot of, you know, control of his abilities, it seems, even seems unaware of some of it. I find it, he seems very Sentry-coded.
Does he start off enjoy powers, or does he get them as the show goes on?
Don't know.
He has them. When the show starts, he appears to have powers, but like Aaron said, he seems unaware that he has powers. He's not actively using the power. Things happen.
Andrew is saying that having watched three episodes, so I'm assuming by episode three, we still haven't seen the powers.
Okay, let me, full disclosure here. I may have fallen asleep during the barbecue scene and the third episode. So it's possible something happened after that. But no, the most powers I've seen was when he was in his apartment at the beginning, or right in during episode two, where he has that little like shockwave effect.
Yeah, and in the first episode, you're kind of given to believe that, oh, I guess that's an earthquake, you know,
in
Los Angeles. And in the second second episode, you're like, oh no, that's him, you know, causing that. So you know, it's really kind of interesting, and you see that reveal at the end of the second episode where Trevor pulls down the draping off the back wall, and there's, you know, this huge, impact pattern there that you get to see. And of course, neither one of them comment on it. Right.
Well, that's great. I do like that part, because anyone else except for Trevor, you think they'd be like, what happened? And if they didn't ask about you, that would be suspicious. But it's Trevor, right, the former Mandarin drug addict. So, he just doesn't say anything about it. Sounds like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I gotta tell you, it's slow paced, but they are very short episodes. Which I like. It's the same thing I'm enjoying about A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. I'm enjoying the brevity of it, that it's aware of the size and scope of the story that it's telling. I enjoy that it's telling two different stories. You're getting the journey of an actor in Hollywood trying to make it, and, you know, him being an idiot about it, right? And then
such an idiot.
Yeah, and then you're getting the espionage, you know, the secret stuff going on from damage control, and sucking in, you know, Trevor, you know, the former, you know, Mandarin terrorist from Iron Man 3, a movie I deeply love.
Me too.
And I, I'm getting a kick out of it. I rather like it. I've watched two episodes. The only reason I didn't watch a third is that I had the self-awareness that Andrew didn't have that I would fall asleep if I watched the third episode last night. So,
I have to ask about this show. If Trevor's in it, is the two-butted winged thing from Shang-Chi in it as well that Trevor hang out with?
No, we have not seen him. Yeah,
correct.
My wife wants a plush of that thing so bad, and I have no idea.
So, Paul, did you watch it?
In the first episode. So, you know, we talked a little bit recently about, we talk a lot about our TV shows. And so I have been, I've been on my what show do I want to watch kick. And I already committed to a season one rewatch of Sleepy Hollow. I'm like deep in that. So I'm like not hopping into too many new shows right now because I want to power through that. But I did watch the first episode of Wonder Man. And to your point, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, what were your thoughts? But
one of the things that I did like about it is, like you said, the first episode was 34 minutes. That's including the credits, and Marvel series credits are usually like 6 minutes long.
Right.
So that was nice, you know. So I think it'll be a quick watch. I thought for me, I think it's smart that Marvel released it all at the same time, because I think I agree with Andrew in that it's a slow burn. Right. I think, you know, if this was a weekly show, I probably wouldn't continue with it, because like literally very little, like the first episode is like the first 10 minutes of a movie. Not, you know, it doesn't really, for me, it didn't establish a strong enough like, hell yeah, I got to see what happens next. And I think by releasing it all together, you know, you at least you can hop into the next episode and say, OK, well, what happens next? But that being said, I mean, I thought for me, it's not a story that gripped me, but I am a fan of I think his name is Yahya Abdul-Mateen. He's the actor who plays Wonder Man. Dude's been in a lot. He was also the Black Manta in the Aquaman movies. He was also the most recent iteration of Candyman. He was also in Watchmen as Dr. Manhattan. I mean, dude is all over, right? I think he's a spectacular actor, and obviously, who's the guy who plays Trevor?
Ben Kingsley.
Sir Ben Kingsley. Like, duh, that guy's a great actor. So, you know, we've got some, for me, I think it's got some great acting in it. I will say for me, the first episode begins with Trevor embarrassing him, not Trevor, excuse me. Simon embarrassing Simon, himself, yeah. You know, yeah. On the set of American Horror Story.
So horribly.
I was just so uncomfortable in my skin.
I fast forwarded through parts of that.
So I know that's the point, but I was like, wow. God, this is so uncomfortable to watch, just watching this dude embarrass himself so bad. But I mean, overall, I enjoyed the first episode. I will eventually get back to it and just kind of plow through it because it's so short. But I think for me, it's worth checking out.
There is a moment in the second episode. There is a moment in the second episode where Trevor is reading lines with Simon. And when they go on tape, you know, when they start recording, he adopts the voice of the Mandarin, and it was a little chilling. I was like, holy cow. I mean, it's almost like, you know, is Trevor dangerous? You know, there's that kind of moment where you're just like, huh. And it really did. It kind of crawled up my back in that moment.
Paul kept talking about how short they are. How short are the episodes?
Well, the first episode's 34 minutes, and most of them are right around that.
So okay. I'll say I think it's funny that you guys are both you and Paul talked about how short they are, because to me, the episodes, I didn't check the time on them, and they just seemed so long because it's so slowly paced. But I will say one thing I did enjoy that our members are talking, I did enjoy the Wonder Man movie where he's in the green and red costume with the back jetpack like he was during his West Coast era. I did enjoy that Easter egg there.
Yeah, I did too. I got a kick out of that.
Yeah, I didn't watch it, and I don't know. I think it says more about me than it does Marvel stuff. I'm finding myself, I just am so disconnected from Marvel live action TV. I haven't finished the last two shows I went to watch, and there are other Marvel shows I didn't even start. I never watched Echo. I never finished Daredevil. I didn't finish Ironheart.
Yeah, Daredevil was finished good. All
that was shockingly. I liked Echo. I liked Daredevil. Ironheart, I thought, was fine, you know?
I finished all three, but if I was going to tell you to finish just one of them, I'd tell you to go finish Daredevil.
Oh, yeah.
There was a time I would get excited about all the new Marvel live action, and I would watch them right away as they came out. And it just, I still go see the movies as they come out, but the TV shows, just for some reason, I'm not feeling that. That desire to watch.
I mean, for whatever it's worth, you're not alone in that. I'm pretty sure Disney understood. Disney gets that too. That's why we're seeing this reduction in, you know, television products. Because other than Daredevil and Vision Quest, I don't, and that one shot of The Punisher, nothing's really been announced as, you know, from a Marvel TV slate. I think honestly, and if, you know, I read a recent interview with Kevin Feige. He's like, I am spending all my time on making sure Avengers is good. You know, the new Avengers movies are like perfect. So I think, you know, I think we're going to see a reduction. I mean, we're seeing it in most streaming services anyway, right? But I, you know, for Marvel, I think they realized, and they've admitted, right? Like, it was just too much content. And so yes, they're kind of focusing more on the movies right now. But I am looking forward to what the product that they're, like all three of those products that I just mentioned that are coming up, I'm actually looking forward to.
I'm very excited for Vision Quest. And I'll say in episode three at this family barbecue I referenced, you do get to meet Simon's brother, Eric, which as we know is in the Marvel comics is becomes the Grim Reaper.
And he's so dead. He's dead, Andrew. He's dead.
And then eventually dies and comes back as the Grim Reaper. Yeah, yeah. Dies multiple times over the course of his life-ish thing. But my question is, do you think that they're going to work Simon and Eric into the Vision Wanda story to mirror more the comic book lore?
Honestly, that is why I'm watching. You know, I had shared, I think, last episode that I had unsubscribed from Disney Plus, knowing that I'd come back, but I was, you know, unsubscribing so that I could condense some subscriptions. And I went ahead and jumped in because I wanted to watch this in anticipation for Vision Quest in case they somehow hook these up. Now, right now, I don't see a path to that, but you never know.
Same. You never know. Yeah, I don't see it. I don't see it yet, but yeah, there's still more TV to watch. So
can I just say that the second episode featuring Joey Pants as himself is fucking awesome.
He looks so old.
God, he does. God, he does. So old. But I loved him, and I loved how Simon pops off on him. I thought it was a great scene.
I have to ask, who is Joey Pants? Because I thought all this time this was just some character until Aaron just said,
No. Joe Pantoliano.
Yeah.
He was in The Sopranos. He was in The Matrix, in a ton of stuff.
He was the traitor in The Matrix.
Yeah, he was the traitor in The Matrix. If you've seen any of the Bad Boys movie, he's the police chief in the Bad Boys movies.
I have not seen any of them. I have seen The Matrix, of course, though.
Do you remember the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie?
Yes.
He was Ben Urich.
Okay.
I know, like no one remembers that movie except me.
I love that movie. What are you talking about?
I mean, it had Jon Favreau in it, too. Like, if you go back and look at the cast of that movie, it's like, oh, yeah.
That movie is awesome. That movie gets way more hate than it deserves. It was a fun movie maybe not fun, but
yeah, I enjoyed it. Honestly, the theatrical version's fun. The director's cut's a little darker, but I truly enjoy both versions.
Same.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. So anyway, Wonder Man, I'm going to continue with it for sure. I mean, I'll finish up the, what is it? Is it 6 episodes, 8 episodes?
I'm not sure.
Do we know?
I think it's 10.
It's
8, I think. I think it's 8.
Okay. Yeah. I'm like, well, maybe not. That extra hour of my time. No.
Yeah.
I will. At half hour an episode, it seems it's digestible, I think. Unless it just shits the bed and doesn't grab me by the halfway point.
I really enjoyed episodes 1 and 2, and I'm going to continue watching today. So
I did not enjoy them as much as Aaron, but do plan to continue to watch. But
you were also very tired. You were very sleepy, Andrew, when you were watching.
They were so. I did watch all of them in one night. The 2.5 episodes were all one Wednesday evening, kind of late-ish. But I will say that I also enjoyed the whole Joey Pants Trevor backstory from the show they co-starred in. And they're two very different recollections of what happened. I love that.
And I think that's important. I think that's a piece of this show. Thanks for bringing that up, Andrew. I think the unreliable narrator is going to come back, you know, because, you know, we're seeing that, you know, Trevor's experience different than Joey's experience. And it just felt like they were spending enough time there that, you know, the unreliable narration, and I think it's going to play back to Simon and, you know, his relationship to his abilities and who he really is. I think that's all going to come back. I think it's all going to tie together. It's going to weave together. Just saying.
Okay. Well, you know, I speaking of staying up late, I was up a little bit late last night getting caught up on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Jason Aaron's run. Thanks to the magic of Neon Ichiban, as listeners will know, I stepped away from Comixology after Amazon ruined it, let's say. But we were talking, thanks to my friend Paul. He alerted me that there was a new digital comic platform from the Distillery folks, which features some of the people who created Comixology.
But you have to fight for your comics there, and that's why it's a combat comic book app. Is that what you're saying?
Sure. Yeah, let's say that. You know, getting caught up in TMNT, I was like, I don't want to try to find all the physical issues. I don't want to have to wait for a trade to show up. They just come out with the iOS app for Neon Ichiban. So I went and downloaded all 14 issues of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles along with the annual and read them all. Got most issues for $1.99 compared to cover price. And then was able to get caught up reading it last night. So I got to say that the app is not
Andrew perfect. Is back into digital comics?
Thanks to Neon Ichiban, yes.
So, what? Andrew, my first question, the biggest one for me, does it have a guided view?
Yes, it does have. So, and let me tell you how I'm experiencing this right now. So right now, I don't have an iPad at the moment that's functional. So I'm reading this on my phone, which is a new 17 Pro, so it's a fairly big screen. And yes, so you swipe, guided view, double tap, go into it, double tap, go out of it. Very similar to Comixology. There's no in-app purchasing currently. There's also no even in-app browsing of new titles. So I do have to log into the website and go buy my titles and see what's coming out there. But I was always already following what comes out each week for my physical comic book purchases. So that's not a big deal for me at the moment.
So it's still very, you know, much of
it's early.
It sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. Very early. I'm hoping more features will roll out as time goes on.
I don't see myself leaving Comixology, but if they, not because I'm loyal to it, just because I've got all my shit there, right?
That's right.
But if Neon Ichiban implemented in-app purchasing, I do feel like I may investigate it a bit more, especially for, you know, maybe not necessarily for like new day titles, but you know, maybe for legacy trade paperbacks, depending on the price, things like that. It's just hard to beat those, you know, to beat the fact that, like, I've been literally reading comics out of Kindle at this point for, what, 10 years?
I think the selling function for me for a different reader, it would be their digital vault service. You know, is there a back catalog like Comixology Unlimited that you can subscribe to for a reasonable fee and really get some reading out of? Like, I've been really plumbing the depths of Comixology Unlimited and Kindle Unlimited through the Comixology app since Christmas, and just really exercising those benefits. And there's just so much good stuff there that I feel like they don't do a remarkable job marketing. You know,
used to be much better. You know, I think, you know, the sales on Comixology used to literally be like pushed to you as soon as you opened the app. I do think that's a gap on their side. You kind of have to look for the sales.
Well, and I do think it's intentional. I mean, you know, one of the things when they fired, you know, almost all of the Comixology staff is they fired the folks who put those sales together. Because used to, you had a different sale, you know, come out every Tuesday. You know, and you'd go in there and just say, oh my God, this stuff is great. And, you know, they're really kind of month-long sales now for the most part, and they're not nearly as robust as they used to be. But, you know, what I'm talking about is the comics that are included in your Comixology subscription, right?
Yeah, and so far I've not seen, it has not asked me if I want to subscribe to any services. So I don't think they have that yet. And it's new. And I looked for some older, like smaller, more niche titles. Like I looked for Vampire Diva, just to see if they would have it. And, you know, they don't yet. But give it time. If it's successful, I think you'll see more of this.
There's a bunch of sales on their front website here. There's a lot of talk about Marketplace. Any idea what Marketplace is? Sounds like you can resell your comic.
Yes. So there is a very new, it sounds like, I think it just came out, where you can buy variant covers of comic books that will only be available for a limited time. And then later on, if you want to sell them, you can sell them in this marketplace. So the generic plain cover will be available always to buy digitally. But there's going to be, and I'm not sure what the time frame is going to be, but there'll be these variants that you can buy for a limited time digitally that will then no longer be available. So it'll create scarcity of certain things. Will the demand be there to fuel marketplace? I don't know. But
essentially. Because it's a digital variant cover, right?
So. Yes, correct. So you will still, it is a digital NFT, but there is still a comic book that goes with it for you to read. But as far as like the unique cover aspect of it, it's essentially an NFT.
But I will say there's a book I've been wanting to read from Distillery that I don't think is available on Comixology called The Missionary. It's written by Ryan Stegman and drawn by Jason Howard. It's a horror comic, and I've been very curious about it. And I'm looking at it, and you can get it digitally on Neon Ichiban for $5. Or if you scroll down to Marketplace, someone's reselling their copy for $1. You
know, I guess that creates a sale environment, right?
I'm done reading this. I'm never going to read it again. I'm gonna try to make a buck off of it, you know. And I can buy essentially the digital version for $1.
They're essentially selling their digital license for it. I think that's cool.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
So while we were on the call here, I just created an account and I grabbed one of their free comics to see what the guided view is like.
Yeah,
I really like their guided view because you can still see like a darker. Basically, you get a zoom in on the panel, but the rest of it's still there. It's just dark out.
It is. It's great. There's a gray border, depending on what aspect I'm looking on my, whether I'm in portrait or landscape, there'll be a gray haze over the rest of the non zoomed in part of the page.
And Wayne, are you viewing on a tablet?
Nope, I'm on my laptop. My iPad's upstairs plugged in.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm willing to give it a shot.
I will tell you that I still have all my stuff in Kindle, and occasionally when I want to read something from that I know is back in my Comixology vault, I will pull out the Kindle app and go back and reread it. So switching services isn't going to lose you access to your Kindle digital vault, right? But I might say, from my perspective, I think by buying things on Neon Ichiban, I think you're supporting a better company that cares more about you as a consumer than Amazon does.
Until they sell themselves to Amazon.
Yeah, that's... You would hope they would learn their lesson, but money, you know, everybody has a price, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I tell you what, Andrew, I will... One of my books next week, I'll buy over here instead of over there.
That's cool. I'm going to try The Missionary, because I've been wanting to read it. So I'm going to check out the first issue of Missionary.
And Paul says The Missionary. I giggled just a little bit.
I just giggled a little bit. He was going to try out The Missionary. That's new for him.
Yeah, it's a new one for me. So.
Okay. So anyway, I like Neon Ichiban. It's a little raw right now, but I think you'll see more features roll out over time if it does well. So I'm excited. I'm still going to be buying probably 80% of my comics physically because I've established a relationship with our local comic book store owners. I like them. I like their store. I want to support them. But certainly if they were to...
And things like that, like you said, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, probably a good option.
I'll probably pick up the whole Escape on Neon Ichiban for next week because I know Aaron wants to talk about it. If something were to happen to my local store, that I'd probably just shift 100% to Neon Ichiban.
Oh, snap.
So that's my digital comic update from Andrew.
That's very exciting, Andrew. Thank you for sharing your experience there.
Absolutely, guys.
We know that was very vulnerable for you.
I was just excited to be able to get, go into back catalogs easily and buy things quickly without having to worry about ordering them online or searching through back, back boxes at the store or whatnot. So I'm excited to have this option again.
Very good.
Well, like you said, you were checking it out because of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because we all agreed to catch up on Jason Aaron's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arc. So those are the first 12 issues of the current run. I think they've published two or three issues since by new creative team, Jean Luen Yang and Freddie Williams III, I think, is on art.
Second.
He's the second. Okay, he's only the second.
Junior.
But we are instead just going to focus on the Jason Aaron for the most part as part of this conversation. And so, we were all hype about it when it was announced, new jumping on point. I think we got a few issues in talking about it on the show, and then it just kind of trailed off for us. And so, I'm curious to hear what you guys think. I have some very strong thoughts. So I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
For me, stopped reading it, not because I stopped enjoying it, but we just got focused on other books. And, if somebody, we do this thing during the week is we'll shout out Thursday or Friday, hey, do we have any must reads for the weekend? And if somebody doesn't shout out the name of a book, a lot of times that book doesn't get read, right? And until much later. And so at Christmas time is when I jumped back in, because I'm like, why did we stop talking about this book? Because I never heard any of us say, I hate this book, right? Or I'm bored with this book. I never heard any of us say that. And so I read, probably six issues of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, between Christmas and last week. And I got to tell you, it's a banger book in terms of the quality of the writing and the quality of the artwork and visual storytelling and narrative. I really got a kick out of it. However, I found some of the resolution in the last issue unsatisfying. And I'll stop there.
I loved the book. I don't know that I would say I got a kick out of it, because let's be honest, it's a little dark and brutal to our characters. Especially the fact that they're running around with a dead rat that they are calling Splinter.
It's their dad. Yeah.
No, I agree. I don't think I'd call it a fun book. There were maybe some fun scenes, especially when April would show up. But it was definitely more of a dark and dismal point of their careers. Especially every time Donatello was on the page.
Mm-hmm.
It was just hard to look at him. So, and I guess that was probably maybe the greatest thing to say about it is the art on this run was amazing. I loved pretty much every single page. I love how he drew Bebop and Rocksteady. I love how he drew the turtles, even to the point that Donatello just made me cringe and my arms and legs hurt when I saw him because he's so emaciated. But no, I wouldn't call it a fun read, but I enjoyed it. The one thing I would say is I do think for 12 issues, I think the conflict between the brothers went on a bit long. I think there's a couple times where it seems like they're gonna get back together and then they kind of fall back apart, and that repeats a few times before the finale. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy the antagonist. I liked D.A. Hale. I thought he was an interesting villain for them to pit themselves against, but overall loved it, especially the art.
Paul, I hated this book. and I grew up just the biggest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan, guys. Like, I loved Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles growing up. I, not just the cartoon, but I was so much a fan of the Archie Comics Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles run, because they had, they kind of started in the animated continuity and then took off on their own continuity and introduced a number of characters, in those books, like Leatherface and the Mighty Mutanimals and all that stuff. Like, I picked up the spinoffs. Like, I am a huge Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles guy. I even have, the NECA recently released action figures of a lot of those characters, and I'm just a huge fan. I picked, so I IDW introduced their own continuity, and I gave it a shot, and I kind of fell off. I mean, I'm talking not this current one. I'm talking about the previous one. I guess it's the same continuity, but, you know, the previous volume, I dropped off pretty quickly because it was like, okay, it's okay. Like, they're kind of just retooling the origins a bit, but I'm not really digging it. And then, you know, this does not reboot the continuity, but it's kind of a soft reboot in that everything else still kind of happened. Splinter still died. There's still that female Ninja Turtle out there, though she's never really referenced in this book, but she's still out there somewhere, which, you know, kind of calls the question why the hell she wouldn't help when everything, when they were literally on national TV in court. But for me, I just, you know, the fact at one, like Wayne said, you know, the tearing down of the characters to the studs, and, you know, kind of Donatello, you know, like a few of them losing their marbles and all that stuff. Like, I get why they, you know, we do that in comics all the time, right? Bring the characters to their worst to see them, you know, claw their way back, you know, from that, you know, Daredevil born again and things like that. But in this situation, it just never felt like I was reading the Ninja Turtle characters that I know and love. Like, it just kind of felt like we were shoehorning them into a story that wasn't necessarily written for them. And then basically for the second half of the arc to revolve around a court case, which then devolved into giant, stupid looking creature, on the streets. I felt like I read it and I'm like, this is dumb. It's not satisfying. And it just didn't feel like Ninja Turtles to me. I mean, I'm not saying that, that I totally disagree with some of the points you guys made. I mean, there are some good moments for me, but overall, I'm like, I'm not enjoying this. I'm not enjoying this whole Ninja Turtles go to court and have to defend themselves, and Donatello's maybe insane, but now he's not, and everyone's hearing the ghost of Splinter, you know, over time, and just kind of the fact that it took 12 issues, right? Like, Jason Aaron basically took 12 issues for something that most folks get done in their first arc, the 6-issue arc. Like, get the band back together, get everything back to status quo, right? Splinter's back, spoiler, Splinter's back to life at the end of the 12 issues. So it's like, and for me, it's like, okay, we spent 12 issues just basically getting everything back to status quo. And I don't know, for me, it just, there wasn't, I did not find enjoyment in this storyline. And I was hoping to, because I am a big Jason Aaron fan, and I've already mentioned I'm a big TMNT fan, but like, I was so disgruntled at the end of it. Like, I picked up issue 13 by the new creative team, and I was like, and I flipped through the first few pages. I'm like, it continues the story. So like, I don't know that I care to continue reading this book. So I'm definitely not going to continue with this volume of TMNT.
I was unsatisfied in the ending, I was talking about the Hale transforming into a mutate himself, as well as, you know, the courtroom antics. Neither one of those things felt satisfying to the, you know, what felt like very grounded sort of storytelling in the earlier issues.
Yeah, the way it started, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I just didn't feel like any of that tied to each other, even though it did feel very TMNT-ish, you know, in the context of earlier stories. But it just felt like all of a sudden Jason Aaron was looking at his watch going, oh, crap, I got to wrap this thing up, you know.
You know, I thought the courtroom part was satisfying. I enjoyed it kind of being a different arena for the Turtles to have to face a conflict in. But I agree that the mutation of Hale in that battle at the end was felt a little tacked on and a little out of left field.
Yeah.
See, I found I was reading through the Jason Aaron issues. Like, I really was drawn into them. But when I started the next issue, I just wasn't getting drawn in at all. So I don't know if I'm going to continue. I have 2 issues to read. I'm going to read both of them before I make my decision. But I don't know if I'm going to continue on the book, just because I don't know that the new creators are able to draw me in the same way that the Jason Aaron story was.
Yeah. And I stopped at issue 12, even though I bought issue 13, because I didn't realize that when I bought them, I didn't realize that Jason Aaron wasn't on it any longer. So I'll read issue 13 with Wayne, and I'll let you know how I feel about it after.
Yeah, I will read. I'll read 13 and 14. I bought them both as well. So I started 13, yeah, but didn't finish it because I also realized it wasn't. It was after the Jason Aaron run. So we'll see. Yeah. See. Because I do wonder if maybe they're going to start in the current timeline, but maybe pivot to a new approach, a new tone to it in the second, you know, as they go on.
Yeah, very and good. I'm pretty sure the artist changed too.
It did.
Yes.
Yep.
It did.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that kind of brings me to this next book, which is not a catch up. It's a new book that came out. There, a new volume of Iron Man came out, written by Joshua Williamson. You know, and we did Joshua Williamson win? No, he didn't win the Funny Book Award, right? For Writer of the Year. He was my nomination, but I don't believe he actually took home the grand prize. It looks like James Tynion IV took the prize. But Joshua Williamson, you know, he's writing the Superman book over at DC Comics. He's writing the G.I. Joe series over at Skybound, which we'll talk about here in a minute. Now he's writing Iron Man. And you know, he writes an essay in the back on just what Iron Man means to him, you know, how much he loves the character, that kind of thing. So issue one came out. And so I was psyched. I was psyched because I really do like Joshua Williamson as a writer. And I, Aaron, I don't know how you felt about it. I did not care for the art in this book. I feel like the writing felt like, okay, we're back to basics. This is very much if this came out when the movie came out with Robert Downey Jr., you'd be like, yeah, this is the Iron Man I just saw in the movie theater. And it kind of feels like that, like takes the core elements of Iron Man and you know, tells a story like that. But the art for me felt like I was reading one of those all ages Marvel Adventures books rather than like a superstar creative team.
Well, Paul, I hate that you're saying that because Carmen Carnero, the artist on Iron Man number one, is a Marvel Stormbreaker, Paul.
Is he? I picked that book up, but I did not read it.
You know, if for those of you who are longtime listeners will know that we gave Marvel a lot of grief about their architects of the Marvel Universe. When they were hailing their crop of writers
20 years ago.
Yeah, a long, long time ago. And so this is, Marvel put out a Stormbreakers sketchbook issue this week, free on Comixology. I'm sure it's free in comic book shops, touting the quality of their Stormbreaker artists. And I have no idea why they're called Stormbreakers, but they're the new crop of cutting bleeding edge artists that Marvel's providing. Carmen, Carnero is one of these, you know, highly talented artists. And I will say, I think that there are pages in this book that are beautiful. There is a beautiful page of Whitney Frost, a.k.a. Madam, walking towards one of her victims in an underground testing facility in the beginning of the book. And it's a beautiful page. I think where he falls down, and this is a problem I have with just about every Iron Man book, Paul, is that if you can't draw technology, you've got no business being on an Iron Man book. You know, if you cannot wield the skills of a technical illustrator, you've got no business being on an Iron Man book. And that's this guy's problem. He does not draw armor. And he's got a couple of different arms to draw here. He's got the, you know, what appears to be the original gray Iron Man armor. He's got the current Iron Man armor that Tony's wearing. He's got some beautiful other opportunities to draw tech, and he does kind of a crap-ass job at all of it. His people, I think, are drawn beautifully. In fact, there is not an image in this book of Madam Mask that I think is not just wonderful.
She's drawn perfectly, honestly. Yeah. It's interesting because, like, she's drawn so well. And, but I will say, this sounds horrible. I also did not enjoy the way he drew Tony Stark.
I agree. But, I mean, he's not drawn. 70s-ish to me. He's not drawn poorly, right? What you're objecting to is you don't care for the characterization.
I don't care. Honestly, mostly the, the hair. The choices made to Iron Man's hair, I feel, are like, okay, so is this like 1978 Tom Selleck? Like, what are we going for here? He's, you know, he's back to the mustache and a soul patch, not a goatee.
Yeah.
Just the mustache and a soul patch and like long black hair. It looks a little silly to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's intentional, you know, given the fact that Madam Mask plays such a large role in this, and Tony and Whitney dated back when this book was published in the 70s, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe that's intentional. Be that as it may, I just really question putting an artist on a book who can't draw technology, who can't draw automobiles and planes and motorcycles and armor. I've got a real issue with that. Other than that, Paul, I loved this book.
Yeah, I enjoyed the writing on it. I enjoyed the fact that, like, hey, this is an Iron Man book. I can literally pick up this Iron Man number one. If I wasn't a 46-year-old comic book reader who's been reading comics for the last 40 years of my life, I could still pick this Iron Man issue up, having just watched the Robert Downey Jr. movies, and like get it. Like it's just, I mean, yeah, there's some references to AIM and, you know, Madam Mask, but like they get you caught up enough that you understand the story. So like this is very, very new reader friendly.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, I do, like I said, I really enjoy Madam Mask. I've always liked Whitney Frost. I think she's a great villain, and she featured very, I think Josh Williamson's doing a great job writing for her. And I think that the artist Carmen Carnero, the Stormbreaker, is doing a marvelous job of her visual storytelling. I just wish he did a better job of the technology.
He's got strong Paul Pelletier vibes, which it does. Just hit me. That like his art style is very Paul Pelletier, who I love, but it's not, it's just off, right? It's like an impossible burger. Like,
yeah.
It looks right, but like it's just off enough that you can tell the difference. So it's maybe over time, maybe over time, because he's new, and I don't know, you know, much about the artist, admittedly, but you know, maybe he'll grow into a more comfortable style over this arc. Because I am going to pick up the next issue. I enjoyed it enough to continue with it because I do like Joshua Williamson's writing on it.
Yeah, the book's a banger. It's got a great cliffhanger. What the hell's going on there, Cap? You know, we get a nice reveal with Captain America at the end of the book. I'm not going to spoil it, but holy cow, is that Norm Osborn? Is that Norm Osborn, Paul?
Yes, it is. He's on the side of the angels now from the Spider-Man books. Like I think, I don't know, Wayne knows, like his sins have been sucked out of him or something. He's all good now.
Well, I got to say, it has been since Brian Michael Bendis, Dan Slott, and Matt Fraction wrote Iron Man that I've enjoyed an Iron Man book. And I enjoyed the heck out of this, with the exception of the problems that I noted. Story is fantastic, and I will be in for issue two.
Great. Well, for Andrew and I, we also picked up another Joshua Williamson book, G.I. Joe number 18. Now, we talked a little bit right before the podcast, just to kind of clarify, if you read your comics digitally like us, a little word of warning, because I don't know how well advertised it is, Skybound does not release their comics digitally until Thursday. So if you're a Comixology reader and you pick up your comics on Wednesday, check back again on Thursday, or filter your Comixology to include Thursday's releases and pre-order the books, because they do not come out until Thursday.
Except when they do.
Yeah, who knows?
It is not consistent. And unfortunately, I missed that G.I. Joe came out this week because of that.
Well, and I will tell you, Wayne, spoilers, I don't know, maybe Andrew will disagree with me. I loved this issue of G.I. Joe. It felt like such a palate cleanser after the Dreadnought War. I think you'll enjoy it, too. This is very much one of those Night Force one-shots that takes a pause from the main story, which I would usually have, you know, I would usually be a little disgruntled about, but now I've kind of gotten used to it. But this one focuses on Roadblock, who I know, you don't know who Roadblock is yet, but like I thought the way they wrote Roadblock in this book was perfect. I really truly enjoyed this book.
I do really enjoy all the Night Force one shots. I think this is the third one we've had so far in 18 issues. So they're usually kind of in between story arcs, but in between main story arcs, they'll intersperse one of these. And you know, after the Dreadnought War, and the shocking revelation at the end of issue 17, It was nice to see Roadblock kind of what he's been doing after he left the military. I liked how he was written. I love that he started a food truck after he left. And no, I just really enjoy it. I think it's a great way for them to showcase iconic G.I. Joe characters who aren't part of the main team at this point.
Yeah, I think it's and you know, the letters page says there's one more Night Force member to be revealed, and they're, you know, so they're kind of building up something here. But this book was just a lot of fun.
Is it Snake Eyes?
I will tell you, I'm glad you brought that up, Andrew, because it was also announced this past week that Storm Shadow and Scarlet would be, you know, they would be coming back to that storyline in the pages of G.I. Joe issue 21. And we just read issue 18. So we're only a few issues away from Storm Shadow coming back to the book and Scarlet and setting up a confrontation with the Arashikage clan and Cobra driving towards G.I. Joe issue 25. So they're clearly building to the big 25, which, come on, we know Snake Eyes is coming soon. So I'm pretty sure they're clearly building towards that. And so I'm super excited about it. And I really think, you know, Wayne, when you get to it, this issue of G.I. Joe with Tomax and Zamet and Roadblock is just a lot of fun.
It is I need them to get to the more Scarlet story, because Scarlet was by far my favorite book in the G.I. Joe line of things that has come out.
We got three issues. It's two more issues after this one before they show up.
Well, and the next two issues of G.I. Joe are focused on Duke meeting Optimus Prime and the Transformers. The good Transformers. Cool. Over the next two issues.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah. So there's a lot of exciting stuff coming in this book. I think it's starting the year strong, so I'm excited about it.
I assume that comes out of Clutch and Hound, you know, revealing themselves in issue 17, or Hound revealing himself in 17 as a Transformer. I assume he's the one who's going to set Duke up to talk to Optimus Prime.
He must. Yeah, I'm excited for it. Another thing, you know, if you've been listening to the podcast these last few episodes, you know, we've been kind of talking about catching up on different titles, trying different things. And yeah, I mean, we still love the, you know, some of the big two stuff like Iron Man and stuff like that. But I picked up a book that I bought the first issue a long time ago, never actually read it. but I was like, okay, I thought it would be fun to like maybe have a rotation where each one of us like picks a new thing that they tried out or talks about a book that they don't normally talk about on the podcast, that kind of thing. And so this week I checked out, actually I shouldn't say this week, literally this morning, because I had a little bit of extra time. I'm like, you know what I want to check out finally? Battle Beast. Invincible Universe Battle Beast. And I think it's because they advertised it at the back of the G.I. Joe book, because I knew it was written by Robert Kirkman. I forgot that it was also drawn by Ryan Ottley, who drew my favorite, you know, he was my favorite artist on Invincible. I know they had multiple, but he was my favorite artist. He also went to Amazing Spider-Man for a while, but I didn't really hop into it. But Ryan Ottley, you know, just known for, you know, great comic book art, but also being able to embrace the extreme gore that Invincible called for sometimes. And so he's the writer, he's the artist on the book. Robert Kirkman's writing it. It is set during the time frame of the Invincible, at least the first issue is set during the time frame of the first Invincible book, or the Invincible volume. And it follows Battle Beast on his journey to find someone strong enough to kill him. Like, he, you know, if you don't remember the Battle Beast character, he's kind of like a Klingon. He's a giant lion looking character, and his goal in life is to find the best battle possible, right? He was raised in a war-torn, you know, in a war environment. He basically is so good at killing people that he has brought peace to his planet. Like, he has ended war on his planet by just literally being so good at killing people. and so now he's trying to look for the next extreme, to the point of he's like, I want to find someone to defeat me. And so that's the premise of this book. I only read the first issue. I loved it. You know, like I truly thought it was a ton of fun. I immediately picked up the entire first arc, and the first five issues of the book, if you haven't picked it up yet, again, digitally, I think are only like $1 or $2, yeah. I should say. you know, they've been discounted because they've been out for, I guess, over 60 days kind of thing. And it's got that Ryan Ottley art. So, I mean, I went ahead and picked up the entire first arc because I truly enjoyed the first book so much. It's, you know, and the premise of it, it is not Shakespeare. You are not reading a character, at least by the end of the first issue, who you will find, you know, like, oh, I really, you know, he struggles in life like me, you know, like he has girl problems. No, it's like, you know, he's looking for the best fight possible. And I'm sure it'll evolve over time. But I really did enjoy it enough. And I'm going to check out the entire first arc and see how it goes.
And that's coming from Image?
Image and Skybound. Yeah.
That's weird. I did not see it on Neon Ichiban.
Uh-oh, Neon Ichiban, get on it. Get you some Battle Beast. So the full title of it is Invincible Universe Battle Beast.
Let me put that in. Yeah, let me put it in. Maybe I'm searching for the wrong term.
But it's definitely worth checking out.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, we from DC Comics, we have the latest issues of Absolute Superman, Batman, DCKO Night Fight, which is the, you know, which was all the rage on the social medias this week because this issue focuses on a potential future where Damian Wayne has his own son and, you know, Bruce is a grandfather. So this is, you know, where Bruce is hopping to different alternate realities where his sons have taken over the mantle. So that's DC Night Fight. It's also written by Joshua Williamson, art by Dan Mora. The biggest release from DC next week is DCKO Boss Battle. So this is the one we talked about when it was first announced, where we get characters from different universes brought into the DCKO. So we'll get Homelander, we'll get Annabelle, we'll get the serial killer bear from what's the book that the you talked about, Andrew? Movie? No, the Beneath the Trees, where nobody sees.
Beneath the Trees. Samantha Strong.
Samantha Strong. We'll also get Vampirella, Red Sonja, a whole bunch of alternate universe characters interacting with the DC universe characters. Scorpion and Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat. So just a big,
excited fun, for this
book that comes out next week. From Marvel Comics, we will get Godzilla Infinity Roar, number one. I think that's just kind of continuing this whole Godzilla arc that they've been doing. I'm way behind on that. I don't know if you guys.
In which
still
Godzilla gets the Infinity Gauntlet? Is that how that's?
Oh my!
I am sure that has something to do with it. but the two bigger releases are Nova Centurion issue 4. Aaron very much talked about how much he loved that book recently. We love that character. And Planet of the Apes versus the Fantastic Four issue 1 comes out
next week. I'm well down for that. Wayne, are you in?
Oh, of course I'm in.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah. From independent comic creators and you know, companies, we have IDW with the final issue of Event Horizon Dark Descent. Issue 5 comes out next week.
Very good. Very good.
And I don't know. I will check out preview pages of this one. Thundar the Barbarian.
Yes.
Issue 1 written by Jason Aaron. Who seems to kind of be the go-to guy for these books lately. So Thundar the Barbarian, issue 1, comes out from Dynamite Entertainment.
Cannot wait.
And also from Dynamite Entertainment, this is probably more for me and Wayne, Gargoyles and Darkwing Duck.
I'm on board.
Gargoyles creator Greg Weisman and Darkwing Duck creator Tad Stones team up to write this crossover book between two of the Disney Afternoon properties from our youth.
Well, it's a
big week.
It does sound like a big week. First really big week since the holidays. So,
yeah, I'm excited for it. A lot of good stuff to talk about next week.
Yeah, well, great. Hey, we want to know what you thought of this week's books, what you're thinking of Wonder Man and all them Stormbreaker artists. We want to hear about that, of course. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. We use your comments on the show. There's a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise possibly in your future.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey, looking forward to reading books with you and talking about them all over again next week.
Catch you then.
Bye.
See ya.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.